on FA Nation. Welcome back. This is the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I'm Dan Malin, and I'm joined, as always, by our FSWA three-time NASCAR Writer of the Year, Matt Sells. Matt, we're coming off, I don't know, not the worst Texas race we've ever seen. Chase Elliott gets back to victory lane for the first time since late 2022. He did miss some races last year, but all in all, kind of good to see the 9 car, one of NASCAR's most popular drivers, get in victory lane. Certainly, you can make the argument that when Chase Elliott, you know, can win some races, that's not bad for NASCAR.
No, that's what the talking points have been most of this week. I mean, I know Kevin Harvick hit it pretty solidly on his podcast. He said it's good for NASCAR. He likes Chase. It's hard not to. I mean, whether you think the NASCAR bends the rules for him or not, I don't know. I think they bend it whenever they see fit, because they certainly let Denny get away with it with an early start earlier this year. So, but yeah, I thought Bubba's response was hilarious. He said, great, now we can't get rid of Texas. Because Chase won, that was a tongue-in-cheek. He did say congratulations, Chase, but it was a tongue-in-cheek reference to why are we going to get rid of a track where the Golden Boy wins? Yeah. By the way, speaking of that, I think I saw a stat that his last – how many wins? Was it 13? I don't think it was 13 wins. But the last, I don't know, several wins have each been at a different track. which is, he's not doubled up at a track in a while.
Yeah.
I know he won a bunch at Watkins Glen, but like since the last one at Watkins Glen, he hasn't won one there. And his wins have come at all different tracks, which is interesting.
Has his only next gen road course win been Coda when they first? Yeah. No, wait, was that even in the next gen car? I don't think it was. No. Does he have a road course win in the next gen car?
I don't know. This was his first mile and a half win or top five in the next gen car.
Yeah, I guess all we gotta do is pull up his 2022 season.
That's true, which was an astonishing stat to hear. But yeah, overall, I thought I had a pretty decent read on the race with who to play. Ross Chastain getting spun out to end the race was an absolute killer for DFS and for, my bets, but you know, it happens. He got loose, kind of checked up. Willie B didn't have any time to really do anything. So I don't really blame. At first, I thought Willie B bumpered him, but then when you watch the dash cam, there was nowhere for him to go. Chastain kind of fell into his lap. So there was that. But now we get pure chaos at Talladega. We're back to the chaotic mess that is restrictor plate tracks. We haven't been at one of these since the first two races of the year. So nice little break. Now we're back. But I do think it's there's a little bit different strategy here than you might necessarily see at Daytona. And also, saw one of our colleagues talking about rewatching the spring Talladega race from last year.
You're talking about Ryan Stevens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a ton of movement without the crashes.
I didn't rewatch it, but I did see the tweet that you're referring to.
Yeah, there was not a lot of movement there, which is interesting.
So stack the front.
I don't know. We're going full stack the front. That's a little bold there, sir. Insert the dodgeball bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out. Clip. But yeah, I do think it's interesting that without crashes, it may be a little tougher to move up than we think it is.
Yeah. And when I reference Ryan Stevens, I mean at Win the Race P1 on Twitter. Really good guy. Nice dude. I subscribe to his site. He does a lot of really good stuff. But certainly, I think it carries some weight. And I also – Atlanta, from what we've seen, 4 bad races, 1 phenomenal race. It's I don't love. I'm fine looking at Daytona and Talladega a little bit when I'm analyzing Atlanta. I don't really know if I like looking at Atlanta too much when I'm analyzing Talladega and Daytona. I can't really put my like. I can't figure out why necessarily, but it's just like I don't know. I'm just used to like the higher variance, more chaos. And it's not that we don't get that in Atlanta. I mean, they wrecked on lap two in the race two months. But I just think that we've seen, you know, bigger ones. And if Ryan's right, then like we could be in for a fairly uneventful race if we just get, you know, 30 plus drivers that want to do laps because they don't want to wreck their equipment. You know, imagine if all 36 drivers just try to drop to the back of the field.
Well, there was the fuel saving that happened at Daytona, which is why it was relatively calm for a large chunk of the race, which irritated the ever-loving daylights out of all of the drivers.
Do we see that this week?
We probably will. We probably will. And let's not forget, there was a few years ago, the SHR 1-2-3-4 finish here at Talladega, where they just had the right setup and those cars were not getting past. They were four out front and ran away from the field and led basically every lap of the race. And there were like almost.
I'm surprised they didn't wreck each other.
Yeah, there was almost no or no cautions. I can't remember if there were no cautions. Everything good there?
It's just a horrendous sounding car going by outside. It sounds like gunfire.
I see. That's what I thought first. I was like, "Well, you know, might have an incident on our hands." But yeah, I mean, are we going to see four cars just drive away with it? I don't think so. Are we going to see fuel saving like we did for most of Daytona, where it was like, "Is anything really going to happen?" There was kind of some shifting that happened, but not real chaos. And then late in the race, there was actual chaos because everybody was on track and on the lead lap at the same time late in the race and completely wrecked out. So I think that's probably the bigger the better blueprint for Talladega than what we saw in Atlanta. I think you're right.
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but we do have some weather concerns this weekend, don't we?
I believe so. I haven't rechecked them in a little bit, but I believe that there are some weather concerns for me.
Oh, okay. All right. So Friday, I am on the weather.com website. Friday during the day, isolated thunderstorms in the morning. Looks like chance of rain is 70%. Friday night, there's no race Friday night, but 50% chance of rain Friday evening. It sounds like there's a fair chance qualifying for the Xfinity Series gets rained out. Let's look at Saturday.
You know what my favorite percentage on this website is right now? A whopping 93% chance of rain on Sunday.
Yeah, they're racing Monday.
They're probably racing Monday because it's going to be 69 and nice. And 5% chance of rain on Monday. So I would imagine.
I think you also have to keep in mind this track does not have lights and it takes 2.5 hours to dry it.
It takes a while because it's huge. It's
it's massive.
It's the biggest track, non-road course on the schedule, 2.66 miles per lap. It's more steeply banked than Daytona. It's wider than Daytona. So it is a monster of a track to try to dry.
I went to Talladega one year. It was actually 4 years ago. During like, you know, the pandemic and when tracks were reopening, but they were limiting how many people could go to the races. Right. I went to Talladega and it got delayed, went the next day, totally fine. But like when I was there and it was raining, the track is just so massive that there on one half of the track, there was just a looming dark cloud with rain falling in certain parts. And then on the other side of the track, it was kind of like, you know, a nice, you know, spring day in Alabama. And so like, it's such a massive track that you just get two, you know, different reads on the weather, depending on where you're sitting.
It's kind of like the fog bank incident at Pocono where because it's 2 miles away from the start finish line. They had fog and the rest of the track was perfectly fine. Where there was a turn one incident at Daytona a couple years ago where they thought it was dry, but it was wet only in turn one and everybody like, it wrecked the whole field and the rest of the track. You and I have been to Daytona. Talladega is a much bigger track. It is the footprint of it is much bigger. So get ready for what may be a Monday race. There's no practice this week. single car qualifying, and then the groups move on. Qualifying does not matter, to be perfectly honest. I mean, maybe if you're thinking that it is a Daytona type race, and laps led may actually factor in early part of the race, then sure, getting guys starting towards the front will help with that. However, even though this is a 500-mile race, there are fewer laps in this race than there are at Daytona.
You know, was it like 167 or 183, it's something like that?
188 laps. So there are 12 fewer laps in this one compared to a same distance race at Daytona because this track is bigger, right? So it's 188 laps. But yeah, do we want to start digging in a little bit to the player pool?
And then definitely think we can. And I also think it's worth mentioning, we always talk Dominator points. You know, we could very well see like a long single file green flag run. That's great if you have that one driver. You better pray they don't wreck, but also don't expect the leader to get the fastest laps as well. Right. Fastest laps are typically more evenly dispersed.
Yeah, usually it's guys mid pack or, you know, the guy four or five cars deep in the draft because that's where the draft is most effective in there. Yeah, it's crazy to watch to scale the on throttle time compared to fastest laps because it's usually the guy that's on throttle least is getting the fastest laps because they're in the middle of the draft and they're just getting pulled along by the wind, and so they're only like 30% throttle where everybody else is at like 50, 60, 70%. It's kind of crazy. So
let's dig into the pool. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's try some new things.
We're going to try something new here. So it may, hopefully it works. We're going to try and share a screen so you can kind of see the player pool as we're talking about it. Hopefully it works out well. For those of you listening, all the more reason to go watch the YouTube video. So here goes nothing. We'll give this a shot here.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, look at this. Amazing. Hey, it works. So here's, you know, whatever. It's the tournament I clicked to open. Ryan Blaney's most expensive at 11 grand.
Are we surprised?
Not really. I mean, it's Talladega. Yeah. Two of his come at Talladega, by the way. Closest margins of victory in the history of Talladega are both Ryan Blaney, because he wins by inches here. You know, in general, if we look at the last 14 restrictor plate races, which is six at Daytona, seven at Talladega, and one at Atlanta, because that was most like a restrictor plate race. He has the best average finish in the field, and it's 11.9. What he's averaging inside the top 10. He also has the most wins. He has the most top fives. So I'm not really shocked to see Ryan Blaney at the top of, at the top of the salary here. It doesn't really matter, to be honest, either. This is a track where, you know, you're going to get so many guys who are budget pieces that spending up for a couple of guys isn't that hard to do. I mean, he was 9,800 at Daytona. It didn't exactly go well. And two in Atlanta, it went a lot better. So I'm not surprised to see him at the top of the chart.
Yeah, my the early week preview that I did for Fantrax this week is looking like I just leaned heavily on the three most expensive drivers because I mentioned Blaney, Byron, and Hamlin as like the top plays ahead of qualifying and all that. But like you can't ever really go wrong with Blaney or the Fords. You could play Blaney Cindric, Blaney Logano, Logano Cindric. You could do a full Penske stack. They will work together. They will pit together. Yeah. The Fords historically have been the best drafters in this type of racing. They probably get the benefit of also working with the Toyotas. The Toyotas, in recent memory, I don't think I've ever wanted to pit with the Chevys. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think it's mainly a Ford pits or Toyotas generally, unless they can't get down and they wind up pitting in a separate group. But You're right. So here, yeah, that's another thing we can stack here this week. Again, those of you who have listened to the pod for a while will know this is about the only time you hear stacking in NASCAR, not just stack the back, but you can stack manufacturers, you can stack teams, because they work together. So if it all goes right, you do really well. If they all wreck out because they're all near each other and the big one happens, then oh well, but that's Talladega. Are we shocked to see Keselowski this high?
Yes and no. Yes, because he hasn't won since joining RFK Racing.
Correct.
It has been over 100 races since his last win. It's so annoying because he finished second last week. Track, though.
I don't know if I want to play him in a plate track, though. He's just
no, because he was awful. Well, I can't remember every race this year. I do apologize, but like I'm gonna assume he wrecked at Atlanta and Daytona because he finished 33rd in both races.
Yeah, he finished 33rd in both races. So pretty hard to run that cleanly and finish there.
But would you be surprised if like he or Buescher won the pole?
Maybe a little. I'm kind of expecting a Hendrick guy to be on pole. They tend to show up with really good single car speed at these tracks. Like Bowman's been on, this was the first year in what, 7 years that Bowman wasn't on
that the he wasn't on the front row for Daytona.
So could he? Sure. I mean, anybody could show up with that kind of speed and land it there. Wouldn't necessarily be shocked. If he was on the pole, I'd take a little bit more of a shot, but not much. Because it's not usually a very good history at Talladega for pole sitters, to be honest. Bubba, though, at 9,200 this week.
Underpriced.
I feel like he's underpriced.
We say it all the time for any kind of drafting race, but he's one of the best drafters in the field.
Right.
He always just somehow naturally finds his way to the front in these races as well.
Like, for those of you that can't necessarily see, here's Daytona and Atlanta, right? He's 8,500 at Daytona, puts up 61 points on DK, goes up to 8,800, and comes back with a 54-point race, which is perfectly fine. He finished fifth both times, had a decent, you know, had some laps led, fastest laps, whatnot. I don't understand. This still feels – I know he went up from the other two, but this still feels like an underpriced week.
Has he won here before?
He has won here. Also, the fans really don't like him.
Which is unfortunate because this is basically his home track that he would
essentially. I mean, he's from Mobile, Alabama. So it is his home track. So yes, is he the most expensive he's been all year? Yeah. Is it still technically an underprice? I feel a little bit. So I think we're getting value. I don't think that he's gonna fly under the radar though. I think he's gonna be quite popular. Everybody, the secret's out on Bubba right now. With
right.
Plate tracks, right?
So. I started laughing because I saw the guy priced underneath him on DraftKings, and we typically advise people to fade Kyle Larson anytime they go to a super speedway.
I'm not playing Kyle Larson. I know he had a Daytona. That's the first time he sniffed the top 10 at Daytona in a very long time. Talladega is even worse historically for Kyle Larson. It's not been... It's not been good. We got to go a ways down when we – so in 14, in the last 14 plate races, okay, Kyle Larson has an average starting spot of 6th. He's been on the pole 3 times. You want to take a gander at what his average finish is?
15.
Yeah, actually, Todd Gilliland beats him.
I do like Gilligan this week. We will probably get to him later on.
But Larson's average finish is 24th.
Mike,
that's
terrible.
He has 2 top 10s in 14 races at plate tracks. Not what we call ideal. So the fact that Bubba has won here before, he has the second best average finish in the field at 12.9. He's got the second most top fives in the field. is only $200 more than a guy who literally can't be bothered to finish inside the top 10 here. It's nuts. Yeah.
I'm looking at the qualifying order in the event that qualifying is rained out, and basically the starting order would just be flipped.
Right, it'd be inverse of the – yeah, Bob Pockrick has
– It would – it does not look like fun at all. And sure, you could take the traditional route and just stack the back, and you would leave probably $30,000 on the table, or maybe 25 on between 25 and 30 on DraftKings. I really hope we get qualifying in, just because it is kind of fun when you get those more expensive options starting at the back. You know, it's good leverage to, you know, be underweight on. But yeah, like with too many big name drivers in the best equipment and the best drafters, essentially, it doesn't shape up to be super exciting in terms of like lineup building. But I mean, there are ways you can certainly get different. Ryan Blaney would start pretty much right in the middle of the pack, and we've already hyped him up as a guy that can move up and win.
And by the way, if there's no qualifying, it's going to be an all Hendrick front row, because it'll be Byron starting second, starting first.
And Kyle Larson would somehow start in the top 10, it looks like.
Yeah, I think he might be exactly 10th.
P10, yeah. God. Yeah.
Daniel Suarez is a sneaky play there, though, to be honest.
Well, he benefits from the fact that he had that great finish at Texas last week. And then let me tell you, like, if I had just listened to our NASCAR DFS preview and just looked at the qualifying and starting lineup, I would have just like played like sure the leaned into the chalky options with like Elliott and Busch. Still probably would have played Larson because he was on the pole, and honestly, I think he still had an okay day.
He had a pretty decent day till his tire evacuated the situation.
Like he lost two laps, got back on the lead lap, and I think he got into the top 10 at some point. Finished 21st, but still had 40 points because he had so many Dominator points.
Right.
So, like, if I had just not done any other research, like, Sunday morning, I think I would have, like, just leaned heavy on, like, Ty Dillon, probably some Daniel Hemric, who wasn't awful, but, you know, probably wasn't great either. But I would have probably had a much better day than when I started overthinking everything Sunday morning. And overthinking is what we're probably going to be doing Sunday morning when we're building lineups for this race.
Yeah, this one you don't want to overthink. Just close your eyes, tap a name, scroll a little, tap another name, scroll a little, tap another name. It does get interesting if there is no qualifying, though, because Cody Ware starting towards the back, BJ McLeod, who is a plate track guy, this is all he does now at this point. Those guys are intriguing. Michael McDowell starting in the back of the plate track would be really intriguing.
I like Anthony Alfredo.
What?
I do like Anthony Alfredo if he starts.
Oh, fast pasta. How much is fast pasta, by the way? Is he? Oh man, he's really cheap. He's $5,200 on DK.
In 2021, he started P30 at both Talladega races, and he finished 10th and 12th. I don't even care that it wasn't the next gen era, but in five Xfinity Series races at Talladega, he's finished 16th or better in four of them.
Yeah, and at Daytona earlier this year, he started 39th, finished 27th with 10 fastest laps. Good for 32 points on $5,200, which last time I checked is almost exactly 6X.
Take it, baby.
Yeah, so not terrible, because he'll be starting dead last if they have no – I mean, he probably will start dead last even if there is qualifying. We're pretty close to it.
If qualifying's canceled, I'm not going to love the starting spot for Daniel Hemric.
It's a little too close to the front.
However, that would just lower his ownership even more.
Yeah. Eric Jones would then become sneaky.
Eric Jones is the only bet that I've placed so far, and I didn't bet him outright. I'm still kind of thinking about that, because I'm only seeing him around 30 to 35 to 1, which isn't bad.
Yeah, let's see if we look at this. I have the tab already preset. How about this? It's almost like I knew we were going to do this. if you go to Action Network and you go to Sports and you go to NASCAR, they have a whole bunch of sites listed, and they'll tell you the best odds across the board. So, yeah, I'm seeing him at 30-1 on DK right now.
Yeah, and I grab the only bet I've placed so far is Eric Jones top Toyota. I got that at 9-1.
Yeah, that's the only thing here is that it won't have.
That's fine.
Really have the what's he going for a top 10? Because everybody's stupid.
I think it was like +110 last I checked.
It's not terrible odds for a top 10. But then again, nobody averages a top 10 bet.
Exactly, which is why I haven't been ecstatic about placing any top 10 bets yet.
No, but Bubba for +105 is not terrible.
Not terrible at all. Plus money for Bubba at a super speedways.
You'd have to offer. You could flip those odds for Kyle Larson, and I still wouldn't bet it. You could give me +410. I still wouldn't bet a top 10. By the way, who's going off for the longest? Hey, Fast Pasta +600 for a top 10.
For a top 10?
How about
that? I don't know. He was 10th and 12th in 2021.
I don't know. Daniel Hemric at +350. You like that one?
I don't hate it, actually.
I think it's going to depend on qualifying, to be honest, because if he's starting closer, if he's starting mid-pack, I like it a little less.
Well, so this kind of brings us back to what, you know, Ryan Stevens mentioned in his tweet earlier this week, is that if we do get more of a tame race, I expect the better cars to finish up front. Like, you know, these back markers do need chaos to really move up.
Yeah, one thing we can track. Here's another secret. We'll give you all the secrets here. If we go to tracks and we go, this is Racing Reference. If we go to Daytona International Speedway, they have every race ever run at Daytona here. So we keep scrolling, and the race here, 500 this year. Let's see, how chaotic was it actually if we sort by starting? It was reasonably chaotic by the end of it, to be honest. But here's where we really need to go is you go loop data. And if we go average run position, here, you'll see that the guys... Most of the guys that started close to the front have the best average run position. Mm. Right? So, like, Logano started on pole. The average run position is 10. Kyle Busch is, like, the only real outlier here until you get to Bubba, who started 24th. And average run position posted it, you know, 14th. But, yeah, you're right. Like, 1st, 5th, 6th, 3rd, 7th, 4th. Are all in the top, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 spots for average run position. So that means they basically held their spots for most of the race until chaos broke out late in the race.
Eric Jones, top Toyota on DraftKings, is now at 7-1. So I'm pretty happy with getting it at 9-1. I am tempted to go with Todd Gilliland as top 4 at 18-1.
Okay, so let's go to DK Sportsbook here. We'll look at some props. NASCAR Cup race.
No. Gilliland is +180 for a top 10. And trying to look at his results. Last three Talladega races, he's finished 12th, 10th, and 7th.
Yeah, he's had pretty good. He's had pretty good runs.
I'd almost rather bet him as top forward at 18-1. Yeah.
Ford's going off at +170 to win.
Yeah.
Or Chevy. See, top Toyotas are fun because there's only like 8 of them.
It was a lot more fun 2 years ago.
Yeah, when there was only 8. But here's the other interesting part is that if you look at this, it's like Truex hasn't been great at plate tracks. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Reddick's been okay at plate tracks. Denny, we know, is very good at Daytona. He's not great at Talladega. He's okay, but not great. Seabell's kind of in that same boat. So, like, process of elimination really only gives you about 3 or 4 dudes that probably are the better bets to finish as the top Toyota.
And we won't be the only podcast or show that hypes up Erik Jones. I think the secret is generally out that he's a pretty good plate racer. I mean, he's won at Daytona before.
Yes.
Just generally has like really good speed and good running position until chaos ensues and he's caught up in it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at these odds and you compare them with average finish among the last 14 plate races, Bubba has the second best average finish. He's going off at 19-5 on DK for top Toyota. John Hunter Nemechek, granted, only two plate races in that time. His average finish is 14th, which is the second best among the Toyota contingent, and he's going off as the longest odds at 18-1, which he probably should be. But just saying, like, Toyotas for me are always the most at these because you can kind of smartly eliminate about half of them. Whereas for Ford, you have a reasonable assumption that basically everybody but Harrison Burton and Cody Ware could finish as the top four. I mean, if we're being real, like, I'm sorry, Harrison Burton, but you're terrible. And Cody Ware probably has a great shot of finishing above Harrison Burton, but that's about it.
BJ McLeod is 130-1 to be the top Chevy. Like,
that's the Cody Ware is only 100 to be the top four.
I, because I was looking and I kind of want to get a sprinkle of Daniel Suarez as top Chevy.
Yeah.
Because that's 16-1. I'm like, I don't know how I don't at least put something on BJ McLeod. Because he got a top 10 last year, I think, on a super speedway. I don't think it was his first career top 10
in the Cup Series. He got a top 10 at the Daytona race that stopped allowing people to parlay top 10 bets at plate tracks.
Yes.
Because he was one of the back five cars, and everybody parlayed him. And the sports books were pretty silly and offered way too long money. Odds on that, and all five of those dudes finished in the top 10 and already got $1 million out of a free bet. And then they said, yeah, we're not doing that anymore because proposition. So there's some interesting bets. If we go back here, see odds to win. So the one benefit to plate for betting odds to win at plate tracks is that you get longer odds for the favorite. Right. So last week we saw Kyle Larson was what, plus 225 to win in some places? I think the longest odds you could find it was like plus 425. This week Ryan Blaney's plus 1100.
Yeah.
Are the best odds. I mean, he's going off a plus 800 at BetMGM, but Caesars has him at plus 1100. So 11-1. Compare that to last week. Obviously, it's a much larger return. The odds of winning at a plate track not really as good as a standard intermediate like Texas. I do find it interesting that Keselowski's right up there with Byron in the plus 1200 range. I think that's interesting. You do have a Chase in that range too, as is Liverpool. Bubba. I really wish it wasn't 16-1.
Yeah.
Really wish it was.
Feels like it should be closer to like 18 or 20-1.
I mean, why is Bell and Larson 20-1 and Bubba's at 6? Like, those are too short for those two guys. 16-1 is too short for Bubba. Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, am I not going to bet it? No, I'll probably bet that. But I just wish it was a better return.
I never feel great about betting outrights at Talladega. Like, I'm an idiot, and I bet, like, way too long for outrights.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of long shots, let's go see if you can.
You're going to talk me into some of these, though.
No, I mean, some of these. not Gilly. McDowell.
It just used to one. It used to be more fun when you can get Corey LaJoie at like 70-80-1.
Or McDowell at 66-1 at Daytona.
Yeah. Or even Stenhouse, who we all knew was a great plate racer, and he won the Daytona 500 at 45-1.
Right. Now he's 35-1 this week. So I don't know. I'd probably stay in this range. I don't think I'm going past that. because I really don't think anybody in this range has a shot. Okay, I say that, but then Justin Haley shows up, and all that guy did for a while was win plate races in whatever series he went to.
Mostly Xfinity.
I'm still not betting Justin Haley to win. Will I play him in DFS? Yes.
Sure.
Yes, especially since he's dirt cheap at $5,600. Like, there's no reason not to, other than he didn't do so well at Daytona. But, yeah, so it's kind of a, throw a dartboard or throw a dart at the dartboard type week. How much salary are you leaving on the? We always say leave a lot, but then, like, it turns out the optimal lineups most times left like $2,500 to $3,000 on the table.
Yeah, and it really just depends on where everyone starts, because it's more about, like, I'm just trying to hit my marks of, you know, getting some low-owned guys that are starting in the top 20. And also, you know, I'm fine eating the chalk in the back of the field, but also, like, if qualifying is rained out and Daniel Hemric is starting in, like, the mid-20s, I don't think anybody really plays him. He could be a sub 10% play, in which case I would like to be 20 to 25% in terms of exposure.
Right.
So, you know, it sucks. It doesn't, it's not fun to say, like, well, you know, I need to see where qualifying, you know, shakes out. But, like, you know, there is this theory when building lineups for a super speedway, you know, you want one guy in the top 15 that carries some win equity. You want two to three guys between, you know, P15 and P25. And then everyone else is pretty much just like starting deep in the field. But even deep in the field, you still find these like value plays that come in much lower owned than if we get like a more expensive driver. Like if Blaney or Hamlin, if something goes wrong and they start at the back, you're looking at a guy that's going to be about 35 to 40% owned in a tournament minimum, maybe upwards of 50% owned. But you'll also have a guy like Todd Gilliland, who's shown, as we've discussed, that he has top 12 equity here, and he'll come in at probably maybe half or a third of that ownership.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I just built the lineup real quick. Some of the guys we've talked about already tonight, Blaney, Bubba, Stenhouse, Suarez, Jones, Alfredo. You know, you could swap out, I don't know, if you don't want to play all three of these guys together, you can take out Jones and put in Gilly. You got $3,700 left. That's probably fine. Again, we don't know where anybody's starting. But
and for the record, you can play the three most expensive drivers, which are Byron, Hamlin, and Blaney. And you can still make a solid lineup, leaving money on the table. And granted, it'll depend on where, you know, the three most expensive drivers start. If qualifying's rained out and they are starting well, or, you know, we know Blaney's going to be, would be around P20 in that case. But like, yeah, it's one of those rare times where you can just plug in the three most expensive drivers and still feel pretty good about just playing some, you know, value plays that can go out and potentially get, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9x value.
Correct. So, you know, this is one of those playbooks. You'll see me write it that, you know, basically anybody's in play this week.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to write up the guys that have historically proven to be the best plate racers or have the best upside with that could be leverage plays. Right. And I'll still give you all the info. Not going to have a practice to qualifying table this week because there's no practice. But we'll still have race trends. We'll still have the DK scoring, Vandal scoring. You know, top guys. If there is qualifying, it's at, I believe, 10:30 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning for Cup Series, I believe, unless it's 9:30 Eastern. Can't remember. One of those two. But, yeah, that's kind of going to do it. You'll see my betting piece out some point Friday. Playbook will be out Saturday. Projections probably out Sunday morning, if not Saturday evening. Yeah, and Dan's got you covered with Xfinity.
Yeah, I'm in the minority, but I'm kind of hoping we get a doubleheader on Monday. I get to work from home. I'm going to need something to watch.
You mean baseball's not going to hold you over?
No.
The Red Sox are taking some shots here.
I'm more of a Braves fan now. But
well, they're taking shots too because they lost Albies. And they may lose Acuna. We'll see.
The Red Sox lineup that they put out on Thursday was absolutely comical.
I mean, okay, but they not to turn this into a baseball podcast, but they also Yoshida's injured. Tyler O'Neill's concussed. Devers is going for an MRI.
And we're now a baseball podcast.
Yeah. Everybody's reading it sucks. it's the state of baseball.
But we'll be in the Discord.
They fairly well get a doubleheader on Monday because it doesn't look great on Saturday, and there doesn't seem to ever be a window on Sunday. I mean, there's literally a 93% chance of rain.
Yeah, we'll be in the Discord on Saturday. If anyone has questions about, you know, if they're going racing, I'll do my best to answer. honestly, like, I could easily see this being a wash, and we're just going to be waiting around trying to get updates on how long it's going to take the track to dry. I feel bad for anyone that's going out to the races this weekend. One of my best friends from college's younger brother is flying to Atlanta, and they are getting a they pretty much rented an RV that they're going to be taking to Talladega for this weekend. And I almost feel bad for them now because it's a bachelor party and it's going to be raining the entire weekend. But hopefully they can stretch it to Monday if necessary and have a great time.
I mean, the infield party at Talladega.
It's a blast. It's great.
It's a great track to party. Even I'm sure it's still going to be fun even when it's soggy because they're going to find all sorts of drunken stuff to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath for any racing happening on Sunday. I also wouldn't hold your breath for any racing happening on Saturday because when NASCAR is in town, Mother Nature shows up. I guarantee you the radar is going to show perfectly clear everywhere but Talladega, Alabama this weekend. So,
all right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you this weekend with Talladega and best of luck to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.